On today's episode of the Fail Forward podcast, we're joined by Gemma McFall, a beacon of hope for those living with chronic pain. From personal torment to triumph, Gemma didn't just overcome her chronic back pain, but she transformed it into a mission to help others. Now a renowned coach and chronic pain specialist, she decodes the messages of our bodies and shows us how pain, remarkably, can be a catalyst for growth and positive change. Get ready for a conversation that could change how you view the signals of your own body. Welcome, Gemma. Welcome to the Fail Forward podcast, where Dan and Adnan peel back the onion on our guest stories and on each other, all in an effort to change the narrative of failure. Enjoy the show. Okay, welcome back, everybody, to the Fail Forward podcast. I said I wasn't going to do an intro this morning, and I've gone straight into an intro as well. So this morning's guest, we have Gemma McFall. How are you doing today, Gemma?
I'm excellent, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Amazing. And thanks for joining us. We've been looking forward to this episode. So we met a few months ago now at a networking event in Dubai. And it was an event where we were busy meeting lots of different people. There was bells, there was like speed fire dating, something I've never experienced before. But it was a lot of fun coming away from it. But you and I did connect, I think, more than anyone. And I think it's the reason you are here today, to be able to tell your story and really give some powerful insight into how you help people that struggle with pain. And it's something that I have struggled with all my life, and I've learned to deal with things my own way. But firstly, welcome along today, and it's good to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Gemma, I want to actually just start off with a somewhat open-ended question. What is pain, the word itself, mean to you, and how has that evolved over time?
Oh, good question. So pain is a negative word. You know, when I used to hear the word pain, I think emergency, resistance, go away from it. You know, it's not good. Let's do everything we can to get rid of it. Probably I would have associated it with my medicine cupboard. Panadol, you know, whatever I could do to get rid of that pain, get rid of it as fast as possible. So that was the old version of pain. And how it's evolved, I would say pain now is, I am so grateful for pain. Whenever I get pain, I'm like, yes, this is trying to tell me something. What is it? And it sort of gives me the advantage, I would say, like, because your body always knows what's going on before your brain, you know. So yeah, now I kind of love pain.
Can you go into that in a bit more detail? Because the only thing that I could think then was a friend of mine that used to live in Dubai, Dean Davis, big guy, loved rugby. And we were talking about when he used to get injured, and he was talking to other rugby players about it. He used to enjoy after the game when he's like iced up everywhere, just in pain, led there, just like, that was a good game. And I used to think, why do you feel like that? But I guess it's the adrenaline and I don't, can you, yeah.
Yeah, see, elaborate, I focus, when we say pain, there's two types of pain. So there's acute pain, which is like your friend Dean, he has an injury. I don't know if it was an injury or just the feeling of like muscles that have worked hard.
Bit of everything,
acute,
yeah.
Yeah, acute pain is useful pain because it tells you, you know what, you've had an injury, now you've got to do something about it, put ice on it, rest it, don't use it, and you'll get better. So that's the message you're getting from pain. It's an alarm signal. So I don't know why. I want to talk to your friend. I don't know why he enjoys that so much. But I do agree. Honestly, I do a lot of sport. And after sport, I love that feeling of like, yes, I've worked hard. But I think what I was referencing before is chronic pain. So chronic pain is once you've had pain for more than 3 months. So if you're still experiencing pain after an injury, after surgery, even for no apparent reason, you've got pain around your body, migraine, back pain, whatever, that is chronic pain and it's trying to tell you something. So that's what I'm talking about with the messages.
Mm-hmm. So how initially when you had your first bout with chronic pain, Gemma, I'm guessing that you weren't really too receptive or able to understand what feedback your body was giving you. how do you look at pain now, either in yourself or in others, and distill what that message is, right? Is it mental stress? Is it physical stress? Is it overuse? Like, there's a variety of different forms of feedback that chronic pain can be giving you.
Yeah, this is true. So my journey with chronic pain started when we first moved to Dubai, 2010. And it was after a dance, I used to be a dancer, it was after a dance injury that shouldn't really have caused that much issue. But because we were moving to Dubai, I went straight to the doctor, which I normally wouldn't do. Normally, I'd just let it heal itself. But I was in a panic because we were moving to Dubai, loaded up on tablets to try and get rid of the pain. And the general message was, if it doesn't go, see a doctor when you get to Dubai. And it didn't go. So, of course, I went to the doctor. I'm just talking like a mild twinge of back pain. You know, it wasn't anything serious. But I don't know how this, I can see now how it happened, but very quickly I was in this kind of medical rat race. I'd go and have, tablets. It wouldn't really do anything. And then I'd have physio and it wouldn't do that much. And I'd go back again. And gradually over 10 years, the pain escalated. But I didn't even realize because it was so gradual. And then all of a sudden I've reorganized my whole kitchen because I can't bend down. I was having spinal injections because I kept thinking, oh, if I just have this next spinal injection, maybe the pain will go away. And so it escalated right up to needing surgery to the point where I couldn't lift my kids. You know, I couldn't do anything. And so during those 10 years, not one single time did I think I had chronic pain. I've no idea why. I just kept thinking, oh, it's going to get better. So at no point, never, ever did I go, oh, what message is this giving me? Like, if somebody had asked me that question, I'd just be like, no, shut up. This is physical. I've seen my MRI scan. There's damage on my spine. What it's telling me is I need surgery. And then the surgeon's saying, you're not bad enough yet for surgery. Come back in 6 months. You know, so then I'm hoping in 6 months it's bad enough so that I can have surgery. So throughout that whole time, I was never looking for messages. There was no messages. It was just pain, and it was just ruining my life. I couldn't run anymore. I couldn't do the things I wanted to do. And it was only once I made the connection between the mind and the body, and I understood the science of why we have pain, that is when I started to see the connection between repressed emotions and physical pain. So would it help if I explain just briefly what that means?
Yes,
I mean, you guys have picked up a big topic to discuss today.
No, let's get into it.
You know, doctors aren't even talking about this. So it's when we started the podcast, you know, where do we even start with this topic? But as it basically pain, we have pain once. I mean, this is kind of like the simple science. Maybe you experience pain and then it creates a neural pathway. The same way when you ride a bike, you never forget, right? It's an established neural pathway. You do not forget how to ride a bike. With pain, it's the same. After 3 months, if you're still feeling pain, it's because the, let's say, pain switch is stuck in the on position and your body's saying, feel pain every time you do this. And it's going round and round. The more you feel pain, the more fear you have, and then you get more pain. And the reason you're getting more pain is because you're having fear. The same way if a tiger is about to attack you, you go into what's called fight or flight. Fear around the pain puts you also into fight or flight. But then if you imagine all the other things in life that could be putting us into fight or flight emotionally, there's mortgage payments, there's kids, there's marriage, there's boss, there's so many things. And our brain can't tell the difference between an emotional threat and a physical threat. So the same thing triggers in our brains, causing pain. So it's not so simple that you can say, oh, the pain is because of stress.
Yeah.
It's not. It's become a learned neural pathway.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that's sticking with me is the fact that regardless of the myriad of things that can cause you initially the chronic pain, even if they completely remove themselves from your life, your own mind telling you that you will expect the pain results in your brain saying, hey, you know, secrete X hormone, send it to X body part. Or as simple as, hey, you're that muscle naturally tenses in anticipation of pain, and it becomes a circular system there. That's really interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it from a real basic point of view, if you see like a super hot person and you're like, whoa, I really fancy them, like something happens in your body, you blush, you know, you're embarrassed, I don't know, but it happens just through what your eyes see. That person might not even, it could be a poster of a person, but your eyes see something and then a physical reaction happens in your body. Before you do a presentation, same thing. Nothing's actually happened. You're just standing waiting to go on, but your whole body is doing something. It's reacting. Your heart rate's up. Mm. So we know that the mind and body are connected. But for some reason, when it comes to pain, we're like, no, it's nothing to do with my brain. Nothing to do with it at all.
So there's a point in what you said earlier then, Gemma, that it's not something that doctors are really talking about. Why is that?
It's because it's not taught at medical school. So from the point of scientific research and, you know, loads of studies have been done on this, and it's been scientifically proven, you know, that if I'll give you an example. You put a bunch of people through an MRI scan more than with no pain. None of them have pain. More than half of them will have some issue with their spine and they just don't know about it. Right? So like, what, but you go to a doctor or a surgeon. I can remember seeing a surgeon here in Dubai, and every time I went, he would show me the MRI scan. He'd show me L5-S1, you know, and then he'd say, that's your problem. That's why you've got pain. But that's not true. That could have been there for years. It's normal to have an abnormal MRI scan. So you literally right then and there go into a state of fight or flight. So from the point of that research being proven, it takes 20 years for it to get down to the bottom line where it actually starts getting it rolled out, implemented as a thing.
Hmm.
There's
another interesting point you meant where when you said the doctor pointed to a specific point in your spine and said, that's the problem. That's easily digestible for a consumer, a client, a patient. It's significantly harder to digest and feel comfortable with the fact that the answer is significantly much more ambiguous and exploratory to solve a pain problem than pointing towards a specific location in the body and then having a three-step pre-designed process to solve it. So there may be an aspect of like the market also not being as yet receptive to a more nuanced solution to problems.
Oh, 100%. Of course, it's quicker to have surgery. But I tell you what, you can have surgery I'm talking predominantly about back pain, but this applies to almost all chronic pain things. You can do surgery, but if you don't address the root cause of why your nervous system is dysregulated and why your body keeps going into fight or flight, the pain will come back, or most likely will come back, either to that same spot or it will come back somewhere else in your body in some other format.
Mm. So I look at comparing that to my own experiences, I think, with chronic pain. And it's only in two instances, and it could be that they relate to each other. And I think it comes down to a point where, with the first thing, sciatica, I struggled with a pain in my lower back to one side, and it was like a muscle spasm, but it felt like a cramping pain. But I think it started when I took on a new job where it was quite physically quite demanding. So I used to lift a lot of furniture into pubs, and that it was quite a physical job. So a lot of twisting and probably not the best use of, moving around, movement, mobility, but also it was quite a stressful job as well. It was long hours and it was quite high pressured. And this is where this sciatica, I think, started coming from. And it was, like you said, it was just triggered. It was just, it would come on and off every now and again. Maybe it was through fear, or maybe it was just through I don't think it was through the mobility of lift. I think it was something else that was causing it. Maybe it was emotional, I'm not sure. But it would be to a point where I'd not be able to walk. I would like be hunched over, and I would be, and I'm doing the actions now if I'm getting quieter away from the mic, but it'd be, yeah, and I would just walk with a limp, and it would spend a whole day like that. And then the next day I could get up and I could run for 5 miles and I'd be fine. And then I'd keep taking Nurofen just to try and, you know, take the pain away. And that went on and on and on for about 7 or 8 years, I think. And I don't think I ever got down to the root cause of it being whether it was some kind of trauma that I was going through or some underlying issue that I just hadn't faced. And it just kept coming back and back and back. And I thought it was all to do with, you know, the physical movement. And but I don't suffer from that pain anymore. And I'm not sure what I've done other than I've changed lifestyle, I've changed jobs. I'm in the sun more. I'm in a different environment. I'm happy and I'm a different person to what I was back then. And I have no pain. I've never had any medication at all, but I eat better. I'm fitter than I've ever been. And it goes back to the Crohn's disease as well that I've spoken about a few times, where this chronic pain in my gut that I was feeling again around a similar time, lots of things going on in my life that I'd never had to deal with before. And I think I put it down to being hereditary. People in my family that had, you know, suffered with Crohn's and different stomach diseases. And that was what it was pinned to. You know, soon you go to see a consultant, they'll say, oh, I can see in your history, your family have suffered from this. Well, this is what you need to take now for the rest of your life. Thanks very much. Have a good day. And I was like, what? That can't be the answer. I can't handle that. So yeah, I went through quite some years, I think, of just figuring it all out myself. But, you know, had I met you a bit sooner, then perhaps, yeah, we could have gotten, I could have saved myself years of just wondering what was going on. But yeah, that's my own experience. Does that sound, you know, quite common? Yeah,
it sounds very, very common. And the interesting thing is, the minute sometimes you don't even realize it's fixed. You go for several months and you're like, oh, I didn't feel anything. And then it's out of your mind, it's gone. You haven't made the connection between the emotional and the physical, only now on reflection, right? Something that I do find quite interesting in what you said is that the pain would move around, and sometimes you could do stuff, sometimes you couldn't do stuff. If it was truly structural, you wouldn't be able to do anything ever. Like, do you see what I mean? Like, structural, yes, is the same pain 24 hours a day, you know?
I can give an example of this, and it's vivid, where an evening before I ran a 10K race in Bournemouth when I was in the UK, this sciatica pain had come back in the evening. I'd probably been struggling for a few days, where I was in bed and literally spasmed, where I was just on the end of a sink in the bathroom, just gripping it and just having these spasms. And I was like, and I was saying to Danielle, it was like middle of the night, I was like, you need to call an ambulance because I'm not quite sure what's going on. And it was terrifying. Then I was on the floor and I was like pushing against the doorway, and I was like, oh my, I've never felt it reach this high in terms of the pain I was having. I didn't know what it was, like an attack of some sort. But eventually I managed to just calm myself down. The pain sort of slowly went. I managed to get to sleep. And in the morning I thought, I'm still going to run this 10K. I drove to Bournemouth and I ran probably one of the best 10Ks I've ever run. No pain at all that day. It was just the night before. So, you know, 1 minute I'm nearly phone ambulance. The next day I'm running the race of my life. I'm like, what's going on? I didn't.
Yeah.
No answers.
But this is very, very common when it's, we call it neuroplastic pain. And basically it's the brain is misfiring signals to your body. So whatever was going on around that time was making your body feel like it needed that pain, signal, like we need to warn you about something. I mean, a very obvious example is when people say, sorry, I've got a migraine, can't go to the event, can't, you know, whatever. And they genuinely have a migraine. You genuinely have pain, because we create pain that's going to really distract us. If we were to be able to create like small pain, it wouldn't be worth it. So the pain is excruciating when it's neuroplastic pain. And I can resonate 100% with what you're saying, Dan, because once I'd cottoned on to the fact that that I was in this pain fear cycle, I used to lie down on the floor listening to, you know, you get these like mindful things on YouTube. I used to listen to these short, mindful things. And for the first 3 or 4 minutes, it was all right. I just lie there. And around minute 7 or 8, my whole body would go like an electric shock through my whole body. And it's as my muscles were relaxing. Now, before I knew what I know now about the science of pain, that would have panicked me. I would have been like calling my husband, get an ambulance, you know. But once I knew all I needed to do was break the pain fear cycle, I would breathe into that pain and not fear it. And then the next day, even though I knew at 7, 8 minutes this would happen again, I would deliberately put that track on, lie there and let my body relax, feel the pain and just not worry about it. And eventually it didn't hurt anymore. One day it just stopped doing it because I wasn't scared. So there's no point keep giving me pain because I'm not scared of it.
I'm thinking as to how that related to what you initially said at the start of the pod, where you said that you detested pain, you were afraid of it. And now you've almost treated pain as a friend, as a welcome visitor.
Welcome visitor
when it arrives. And that's nothing. There's nothing changing in your body. There's nothing that you are actively changing in your body. You're just applying a different mindset to how you think about pain.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to go there, Adnan, as well, and I'm glad you stepped in with that, because one word, I don't know if you use this word, but resilience towards pain as well. So I've given my examples of these short doses of chronic pain that have come and gone, and now they have left. What about people that have come back from surgery, life-changing surgery, that feel pain every single day but still want to push themselves, and they've become incredibly resilient through that pain as well? It's difficult to understand how people can still achieve. You know, we've had some guests on recently and people that we've been discussing with recently that have had these back injuries that have completely stopped them in their tracks. And now they've ended up competing in ultra marathons or marathon disables, and that's just pure resilience. And they must feel that pain still, but yet they don't let it stop them, and they just keep going and going and going.
I would love to meet these people, because pain is created in the brain always. So, and I think it's amazing, absolutely amazing that they don't let pain stop them. And that's one of the number one things with clients, is I get them back to doing the physical things they used to do. Because you have to prove to yourself and prove to your brain that you're not scared of the pain. But the thing is, there's a very fine line. You can keep on pushing through pain and it's killing you. But if you don't get your nervous system regulated, you'll keep feeling pain. But if these people, you know, that we're talking about, studied the science behind pain and could see why their nervous system is dysregulated, eventually they can also break the pain fear cycle and get out of it. So, yeah, please connect me with them.
I will. And it's kind of like your limiting beliefs a little bit, just knowing that, if there's a way you can control these neuro pathways where it's saying, there's fear there, there's pain. If you can just switch that on and off, and you can, what a superpower that is.
Yeah, we can't. So it's not about, so what it is, you've got a neural pathway for pain, and that will always be there, always. And 20 years from now, it's still going to be there. So we need to build a new non-pain pathway. So it's about, and then the more times you travel down that pathway of not having pain, the more evidence you have that you're okay. And then eventually, you get there.
That's actually a perfect final point to what I'd love to do next. Is, Gemma, I want to talk you through some of my philosophy on how I deal with sickness and chronic pain in my own life. And you can tell me where I'm right, as well as where I'm wrong and can use some improvement. So a majority of the kinds of pain, I'm 28 years old, so I'm fortunate to not have to deal with some of the chronic pain of old age. Most of my pain comes from running. So I'll have, a consistently sore knee for 3 to 4 months. Lower back issues sometimes after a big race. And recently I've had chronic pain at the base of my right toe thumb. Toe thumb? I don't know what the right word for that is.
Do you have a toe thumb, Adnan? I didn't know about that.
I do have a toe thumb. That's what I call it.
A thumb for a toe.
Thumb for a toe. It's like the big toe. And my philosophy across that, as well as sickness, is I don't have anything against going to a doctor. And I will if the pain gets bad enough. But my philosophy is, one, having gone through the experience multiple times, I realized that all I need to do is reduce the volume of exertion on the body or that body part, and then very gradually build it up. And then the second thing that I always try to preach this to everybody I meet is, before you jump straight to a doctor or antibiotics when you have pain or even just a flu or COVID for that matter, sleep at least 5 to 6 days, 8 hours. See if that changes anything. See if that speeds up the recovery process, and try to at least double your intake of water. It's simple, but it's like that feeling of understanding that it's going to go away by itself, and then I'm going to like adjust the two variables that play the biggest impact on the likelihood of me having chronic acute pain or sickness.
Yeah. Good job, Adnan. That's great. So everything you said, yes. I think having the belief this will go away is crucial. So I have a 6 and an 8-year-old. And when they come to me with symptoms of, you know, kids always have something, the first thing I ask them, like they say, oh, mommy, my tummy hurts. So I say, oh, what's going on at school, you know? You worried about anything? And I immediately go down, not in a really obvious way, but in a kind of like inquisitive way. And then, you know, I'll give them a little bit of attention and make them feel like safe, because it's ultimately about safeness. And yes, sometimes it is a tummy bug, and then they need, you know, whatever you would usually do for that. But oftentimes it's not. And I'll say, you know what, why don't you go to sleep? Because the body heals itself while we're asleep. And then you check with me in the morning if it's still a problem. So what, for me, I'm trying to get that belief into them now that the body heals itself. Like the body heals itself. So the only thing I would say about the doctor part is, before you go down any kind of mind-body route, you need to check with the doctor you've got nothing life-threatening. So like your toe thumb, is it life threatening? I would guess not. You know, I'm sure not. And sometimes things do need aligning. Let's say you go to a physio and maybe they can realign you. That's great. They're amazing at what they do. But if you have to keep going back there over and over and over again, it's because your body is not healing once they've done what they need to do. So it's about working in partnership with the medical professionals. However, there was one thing you said right at the beginning, Adnan, which was, luckily, I don't get the old age chronic pain.
Like me, you were saying. Yeah, I heard that as well, Gemma.
This is a belief. This is a belief that when you get old, you get chronic pain. And that is why so many people I meet at networking events and things, they'll say, oh, I've got back pain, but it's just because I'm old. And therefore, then they'll live with back pain for the rest of their life because they've already got this belief old people have pain, which is, again, not true.
Mm. So now there's a topic.
Go ahead, Dan.
I watched something recently about this 100-year-old marathon runner, still running marathons now, looks fit as a fiddle, and he's there doing chin-ups and absolutely smashing it. 100 years old, believes that he's probably 28, I imagine. And I just think it's possible, isn't it? And it's down to things you can control and things you can't, like your toe thumb. I've never heard of it.
Very judged for this toe thumb. I want to hear the story, but can we just pause for a second and define what the word is for your big, I guess it's a big toe.
Just big toe, I think.
It's a big toe. All right.
I kind of want a t-shirt now, just a big toe thumb and just toe thumb underneath, just because it's a word that I find quite funny. Anyway, I digress again.
All right.
I think if I could just say something to Dan, you mentioned earlier, you said, I wish I met you before so that I didn't have so many years of being in pain, if you could have got to the root cause sooner.
Mm.
My biggest hope, for the world is that one day what I'm doing will be taught at schools, and it will be so mainstream that we won't be in this chronic pain pandemic that we have right now. You know, it's the science is so crystal clear, but nobody knows about it. And I'm like, And when I first found out about it, and I literally threw myself into research mode, I was so angry that nobody had told me about the pain science. So I really hope one day all doctors know about it, all kids know about it from school, and we can kind of, you know, like when we used to think the world was flat, and then there was somebody going, no, it's round. And everyone was like, no, it's not. It's definitely flat. I feel like that's where we are right now with this subject.
Yeah. I mean, I had such a nice feeling when you said that. And I really mean it. And I think that's how I felt when I met you as well. When we started, you know, we had our very short 2 minutes to discuss who we were and what we do. And I was like, yeah, but Gemma, I've had this pain. And I'm like, but I don't know why I had it. And even now talking to you, I'm kind of reliving that experience of having the sciatica for so long. And I really struggled with my sleep. Really, really struggled. Newborn baby, high pressure job, all the hours under the sun. And it just kept coming back. And I wasn't letting my body have enough time to just recover and just let things go. And it goes back to, I think, and I say again, yeah, time is our greatest asset, 100%. And anything that can speed up a process to help you progress, to move forward, you know, it's not about work-life balance, it's about work-life progress, is important. And I think for, you know, for anyone out there that can help speed a process of recovery or, you know, getting you to where you want to get to, I think, you know, doing an amazing job. So yeah, thank you for being that person. And I hope you do get, not I hope, you will get into the schools. And I think, yeah, you've definitely got a place there to be able to, you know, be on stage in front of so many kids across the world, just to be able to explain that, you know, through belief and these neuro pathways and things, and maybe even give a shout out to Toe Thumbs as well. Who knows?
Yeah. But you know, it's not about me being in the schools. I want it just to be like, everybody knows if you drink water, it's good for you. I want it just to be so common knowledge, because it should
one of my be. Biggest so. Non-negotiables now is a pint of water every morning. It's one of the hardest things I'm trying to achieve every single morning. No coffee. First thing I do, pint of water, just hydrate. So important.
I love that. All right, let's get into our game.
Yes.
Yeah, sound good?
Let's play the game.
All right, as all of our listeners know, we have this game called The Meaning of Life. It's a thought-provoking exercise, is I guess what I'd call it. So I'm going to open up the deck of cards, and whenever you'd like, Gemma, just say stop, and I'll take the card kind of where my finger thumb is at.
All right. Your finger thumb's tired, and then I'll say stop. Stop.
It's a mixture of nerves and excitement when we play this game.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Which unfortunate emotional traits have you inherited? Awkward.
Which unfortunate emotional traits have you inherited from your parents?
Emotional
traits as well. This is a good question.
Yeah, I think you couldn't have picked a better question for the subject we're talking about.
They're all meant to be. I think it's this. Yeah.
Yeah, there's certain, well, I sort of certain personality types and behaviors that people who have chronic pain tend to have, and if I list them, that would probably answer your question of what I picked up. So, like, people-pleasing, for example. Does that count as an emotional trait?
I would say it 100% does.
Yeah, so, like, people-pleasing, because I want everyone else to be happy, so therefore I don't do or say what I think I should do or say, and I suppress the emotion, and so it goes inside. People-pleasing, perfectionist, definitely.
Which of your parents do you get this from?
The perfectionist is probably my dad. People pleaser are definitely both of them.
Mm.
Yeah, I won't be sharing this episode with them. so people pleaser.
Do they know that themselves, that they're people pleasers and your dad being a perfectionist?
Yeah.
And they're okay with it, or have they learnt to deal with those emotions, do you think? Or is it a generational thing? What are your thoughts?
Like another one, for example, is hard worker. Like there's a belief we must work hard, you know. Mm. So the highly responsible, you know, very empathetic to other people's feelings. So like these, overthinking, very analytical. So all these traits are things that personality types that make us have more pressure on ourselves. And then it makes us kind of angry, but we keep smiling because we're people pleasers. And then we suppress. And eventually it becomes kind of like rage because it's all on the inside. So I would say I got those from my parents. And well, not just them, you know, like I have them anyway. And because these types of traits served me for so many years, I kept being a people pleaser. I kept putting everyone else forward first. But it's only once I went through this kind of pain journey that I learned to process those things and change the way I am. So
how
I'm not
would you
that anymore.
Say you are now?
I would love to say that I'm completely zen and, you know, like there's like no stress whatsoever, but that's just simply not true because I think I had such a lot, like a long way to go. I no longer have back pain, but I can tell you now, like other things pop up. So like I'll get a headache, let's say, and I used to get Nurofen as fast as I could to get rid of it. Now I'll get a headache and I will deliberately sit with it, even if I have to sit with it for the whole day. And I sit there and I think, what's going on? What's going on? Why? What's going on emotionally, you know? And I'll get a piece of paper out and I'll do a mind map of all the things it possibly could be. And then I'll write something and I'll be like, that's it. And I just know what it is. And it's stupid little stuff. Like I remember not that long ago, my husband was traveling and he'd been gone all week and I'm here with the kids. And it's just this feeling of like, it's not fair. I want to go on an aeroplane. You know, it's the sort of thing that like a five-year-old would say is the kind of anger that's locked up. And I didn't even need to do anything about it. I just needed to acknowledge like, oh, it's because I feel a bit trapped. And then the migraine just or headache just will kind of dissipate. So I think that's where I am now. I'll get physical symptoms, whether it's a twitchy eye or I often get like a twitchy left eye. And again, it's just something that's going on because I'm being a bit too much of a something, people pleaser or whatever.
So it's like your level of awareness has increased a lot, like just to be able to sit and reflect on.
Significantly.
And not so much on the people pleasing. I mean, personally, I think one of the greatest kind of states you can be in is to not care what anyone thinks. Because I was a huge people pleaser as well. And now I've got to a point, you know, we had this conversation fairly recently as well, that just to be in a place where you don't care what people think, it's like such a freedom. And I'm getting better at it. I'm not 100%. And I don't know if that's a trait I picked up from my parents or not. I think my dad, I don't know if he had a big ego, but he was very much center of attention. Like he was the life and soul of a party. And I think I picked that up to a point where I was a bit show offy, bit of a knob, really, I suppose. Just if I'd go out, I just wasn't my true self. I think I was just always trying to get the attention. I think that was good and bad. Cause it meant that I could make a lot of friends and it was good fun. I used to enjoy acting that way, but then there was times where I used to sit the next day after, you know, having a few drinks the night out and I think, what was I doing? And now I'm just not like that at all. I think I've learned from those experiences. So I think that's mine as well, yeah. What about you, Adnan?
There was a podcast I was listening to and the question that was asked to this guest, I don't remember exactly who the guest was, but it was somewhere in that space of like the Jay Shetty's. And the question was, what do you not care about that most people do? And the answer was being understood. I'm okay with being misunderstood. And that was like something that really shifted a switch in my head, where we feel like when we communicate, we optimize or we overtalk for being understood. And I still face challenges with that. So that's not necessarily answering the exact question, which I will, but I think that's something that I really internalized, that like I'm going to share who I am and what I do and what matters to me. But I don't actually ultimately care if it's fully understood and internalized in the person I'm talking to. But that's very hard, especially when you are running a business or you are at work and the goal is to communicate effectively and to the best of your ability. Yes, at work, yeah, you try to do that, but with who I am as an individual, it's what I do, this is why I do it, you don't understand it, not my problem.
I love that, Adnan. I can resonate with this so much. When I moved, I used to be a HR director and it was so straightforward. It's a, you know, everybody knows what that is. And now I do what I do. The minute I used to start telling people and I'd get this like, but what if they question me about it? Because it's so different to what they've heard before. What if I can't convince them? And then somebody was like, it's not your job to convince them. They'll come to you when they're ready. And if it makes sense, they'll come to you, like, just be you. And so, like, I am on this journey, Adnan. I really appreciate you sharing that.
No, I hear you too. I mean, and you, I'm sure you face those challenges too, where you struggle between wanting to be understood and being okay with misunderstood. And ultimately having, in your specific situation, having that patience to know that, shit, you may misunderstand yourself at times. Because other people are misunderstanding you, it's having that belief and that patience to know that eventually, if I believe enough strongly, my actions will speak for themselves. And I don't need to verbally convince someone that what I'm doing is the right thing or the thing for me. But back to the initial question, for my mom, I've gotten a high... a sensitivity to get into that fight or flight response quickly when something is imperfect. I'm planning an event. I'm making my, you know, like a little late on my morning schedule to get somewhere. Like if those things are imperfect or if there's something I've forgotten at home before I leave the house, it very easily triggers the fight or flight response in me. And I think from my dad... this is interesting.
They're thought-provoking questions.
I think there is a... My dad has become... He's a great people manager in many ways. But there are also challenges that come about when you quell your authenticity to essentially ensure that a situation is managed well. And I've had to work through balancing to what extent... I should like keep my opinions to myself when they don't add value to a conversation or the end goal of a specific situation, versus to truly be authentic and like share my weirdness out to the world.
I was going to say that, embracing your weirdness. Now that's quite like key to your, I don't know, your psyche, or I don't know. I find it hard because when Adnan talks about weirdness, this is where my unfortunate trait comes in. Like, yeah, but what are people going to think, Adnan? We can't talk about that because that's so weird. But you've got to embrace your weirdness. And you, I think it's that, yeah, one-on-one, you know, whether it's a client or someone that you're trying to do business with or just, you know, network with, whatever, you don't have to be the right fit. And just knowing that you're not the right fit is absolutely okay. Move on.
Yeah.
Simple, isn't it? But that's quite a hard thing to... get your head around, I think.
We talked about how I like sticky things for 30 minutes on like our previous podcast.
Yeah, Adnan loves stickers. I mean,
I'll send you some stickers.
Please do. That would be highly appreciated.
With toe thumbs on them.
what a way to end. Embrace your weirdness. Yeah. Gemma, anything final you feel like we want to touch on, we want to reemphasize? We've talked a lot about a lot of stuff, and I want to give you the room to really end off with something that you want to communicate to the world.
Yeah, I mean, if you're living with chronic pain, because you've been told that you have to or you believe you have to, just be open to unlearn everything that you think you know about pain and relearn the new science. You haven't got to adopt it, but just throw yourself in and just see what's there.
Love it. Yeah. And where can people find you?
My website is literally just my name, gemmamcfall.com. So you can find me there. And actually, there's an assessment on there. It's a video of me going through. There's three ways to sort of identify if you have neuroplastic pain. One is traits from your things that may have happened to you in the past, trauma. It doesn't even need to be big trauma, but I list them in this assessment. Personality trait, and again, I list the ones that could be contributing to chronic pain. And the other one is questions about the pain itself. One of the questions we talked about with Dan is the fact that, does your pain move around? If yes, it's probably neuroplastic. So there's other questions there. So if anyone is curious, you know, and thinking, I'm not sure about this, but this sort of makes sense, go through that assessment. And by the end of it, you'll have a pretty clear idea if it is something you can do something about or not.
Thank you, Gemma. Now, we'll put these links in the notes, but just so for everyone out there, it's gemmamcfall.com. Go and visit, do the quiz, do the assessment, and you never know. You just might find the answer. Thanks for listening. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Find us at Instagram, failforward.pod. If you know someone that wants to be on the show, or if you want to be on the show, give us a shout, DM us, and we'll see you soon.